Last week, John the Baptist pointed to Jesus, said, "Behold the Lamb of God." Two of his disciples, Andrew, who is named, and another one who is not named, who most Bible scholars think it's John the Apostle, the writer of the Gospel of John, heard John the Baptist say that, and they followed Jesus. They went home and spent part of a day with him, and left that meeting believing that he was the Messiah. Andrew left Jesus, found his brother Peter, brought him to Jesus. And we start there tonight in the last part of verse 42, John chapter 1, where Andrew had brought Peter to Jesus. And when Jesus beheld him, he said, "Thou art Simon, the son of Jonah. Thou shalt be called Cephas," which is by interpretation, "a stone." A stone. Now, when it says there that Jesus beheld him, it comes from the Greek word emblipo. And it means not just to glance at, but to look intensely at, to gaze earnestly at. And Jesus, yeah, he looked at Peter's outside, but he also looked at Simon Peter. He also looked at Simon's heart. And what did he see? He saw a man with a great heart, but somebody that had an impulsive nature. And as we read the New Testament, we know that. We know that Peter was very impulsive. Sometimes he spoke before he thought. When he did that, sometimes he stuck his foot in his mouth and wished he had just kept his mouth shut. And so he was a man prone to making mistakes, and he made his share of them. But they were mistakes of the head, not of the heart. And so he was unstable. Unstable, the author says, unstable as mud. He was unstable, but Jesus saw more than that. He saw a man that could be transformed and made into a vessel that he could use. And it's possible that Jesus saw the longing in Simon's heart to be more stable, to be that stone, that rock. And so when he came to Jesus, Jesus said, "You're Simon, the son of Jonah. I know you. I know your dad. But you're going to be called Cephas." Now, that Greek word, Cephas, is a Greek word. And again, as he's done a couple times already in the first chapter, John interprets that word for his Greek readers. And so the Greek word is Petros, meaning a stone. He's not one now. He said, Jesus said, "You're going to be called. Thou shalt be called. You're not one now, but you will be that rock. You'll no longer be unstable. You'll be that rock that can be built on." Now, that prophecy was fulfilled in when Jesus said in Matthew chapter 16, verse 19, where Peter confessed that "Thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God." He said, "Now you're that stone." So here's a little formula that we can apply to Peter. Man as he is, in Peter's case, an unstable, impulsive person, plus Christ can be equals what God intended that man to be. When God made Peter, when God oversaw the birth of Peter, when he was born to Jonah and Jonah's wife, God saw a man that was a rock, a foundation that he could use in his service. And Peter couldn't be that until he came to Jesus. God creates all of us for a purpose. There's a reason for us to exist. God knows that reason. Sometimes we don't for a while. But it's not until we come to Christ and get in him that we can be what God made us to be. All right, look at verse 43. "The day following, Jesus would go forth into Galilee, and findeth Philip, and saith unto him, Follow me." So if you've been following along in the next day, the next day, and the next day, this is the fourth day since we saw John the Baptist talking to the priest and the Levites, and they were asking him who he was in verse 19. So this is 4 days later. Jesus is on his way to Galilee, home, probably to Nazareth. Okay? He hadn't started his public ministry yet. He'd been baptized by John the Baptist. He'd been tempted 40 days by Satan in the wilderness. He had called his first disciples, and now he was ready to start his public ministry, and he was going back to Galilee to do that. And so as he went to Galilee, he found Philip. And again, that word found, he findeth Philip, implies that it was after a search. Okay? So he findeth Philip, and he said, "Follow me. Follow me." And the tense of the verb follow means to keep following me. It wasn't just a simple invitation to accompany Jesus into Galilee. It was an invitation and a challenge for Philip to be one of Jesus' disciples. And so he said, "Philip, follow me." Now, in verse 44, it's almost a parenthesis there. John writes, "Now Philip was of Bethsaida, the city of Andrew and Peter." So again, they probably knew each other. A small town, okay? Peter and Andrew were well known in the town, and so Philip probably knew them, and they probably knew Philip. And so Jesus said, "Philip, follow me." Again, no specific response in words that Philip offers to Jesus when Jesus says, "Follow me." But his actions now speak louder than his words. Look at verse 45. "Peter findeth Nathanael and saith unto him, We have found him of whom Moses in the law and the prophets did write, Jesus of Nazareth, the son of Joseph." And so, again, Peter findeth Nathanael. The verb findeth implies that he had to look for him. He searched for him. And again, Philip has responded to the call of Christ. Follow me. Just like when Andrew left and found Peter, and I believe just like John left his meeting with Jesus and found his brother James, and perhaps Peter and Andrew went back to Philip and told him about Christ. And when Christ met Philip, he said, "Follow me." He'd already heard from his buddies in town who Jesus was. Now Philip findeth Nathanael and does the same thing. Let me tell you, we found the Messiah. It's Jesus of Nazareth, the son of Joseph. That's the way the gospel spreads. One person finding it, then going to another and telling them. And then going to another and telling them. And then going to another, telling them. That's always been God's plan. It's been the plan from the very beginning here in the New Testament. The name Nathanael in the Hebrew means God has given. Now, in the other Gospels, when the disciples are listed, Nathanael's listed as Bartholomew. It was common to have a Greek name and an Aramaic name back in that day. And so the other Gospels mentioned him as Bartholomew. And in John chapter 2, we learn that he was from a town called Canaan. Cana, C-A-N-A. That was his hometown. Now, when Philip found Nathanael, he said, "We have found him of whom Moses in the law and the prophets did write." He was talking about the Messiah. He was talking about the one that was going to come, the one that Jews were looking for. And Philip said, "We found him. We found the one we've been waiting for. We found the Messiah, and he's Jesus of Nazareth, the son of Joseph." Now, again, we know that Jesus was virgin born, okay? And so he had no earthly father. And yet, here's Philip saying he's the son of Joseph. You might think, well, that's a contradiction in the Bible. Well, no, it's not. Jesus grew up in Joseph's household. Joseph was his foster dad, however you want to say it. And so it was natural for Philip to say, "Hey, it's Jesus of Nazareth, Joseph's son." And in no way takes away from the truth of the virgin birth. Again, he grew up in his household. Verse 46, "And Nathanael said unto him, Can there any good thing come out of Nazareth?" Can there any good thing come out of Nazareth? "Philip saith unto him, Come and see." come and see. Well, when Nathanael responded, it wasn't a very good response. He said, out of Nazareth? I mean, are you kidding me? Can there anything good come out of Nazareth? Now, again, Nazareth was a small town. Cana wasn't very far away. It was a small town. And you might think, well, maybe it was just small town rivalry. I will tell you, Nazareth did not have a very good reputation in Jesus' day. It was on a trade route, and so it attracted a lot of people that stopped there. And so as people stopped there, evil, wicked people stopped there and worked their wickedness. And so it didn't have a very good reputation, but it doesn't matter how bad the town was. Earth's fairest flower, the Lord Jesus Christ, grew up in that town. So, Nathanael says, can anything good come out of Nazareth? And I like what Philip said. He didn't argue. He just said, why don't you come and see? Just come and see. You see, one demonstration of God's grace can overcome thousands of arguments. Thousands of arguments. So, Nathanael said, okay, you've challenged me. I'll come and see. Verse 47, Jesus saw Nathanael coming to him and saith of him, behold, an Israelite indeed, in whom is no guile. An Israelite indeed, in whom there is no guile. That word guile comes from a Greek word dolus. It means deceit. It comes from a verb that means to catch with bait. Okay, so it's a word where you try to trick somebody, like you're tricking the fish to bite your hook with the worm. Okay, the worm's the bait. You really want the fish to take the hook. If you were just wanted the fish to have the worm, you just throw the worm in the water and let the fish eat the worm. But you're trying to deceive the fish to take the hook. And so here's Jesus said, again, as Nathanael approached him, behold, an Israelite in whom there is no deceit. Now, that same word, dolus, is used in the Greek translation of the Old Testament in the book of Genesis, where it describes Jacob. Okay, and you'll see why I'm talking about Jacob in just a minute. In Genesis 27, verse 35, Isaac was speaking to Esau after Jacob had tricked his dad out of the blessing. You remember he dressed up like Esau, and his mom, Rachel, helped him put on Esau's clothes. He put skins on his wrist and the back of his neck because Esau was a hairy man and Jacob was a smooth man. Isaac, their dad, had sent Esau out to the field to kill a deer. He said, you kill a deer, prepare the meat, bring it in to me, I will eat it, and then I will give you a blessing, the blessing of the firstborn son. Well, Rebecca, Isaac's wife, heard her husband say that. Jacob was her favorite son, and so she contrived with Jacob to fool his dad and get the blessing. Jacob got the blessing. He left. Esau came in. Here's what Isaac said to Esau. Thy brother came with subtlety, dolus, same word, and hath taken away thy blessing. And so Jacob was known for his deceit. He was known for his guile. And so when Jesus said, when he saw Nathanael coming, he said, behold, an Israelite indeed, in whom is no Jacob. There's none of Jacob's deceit or guile in Nathanael. Now, verse 48, Nathanael saith unto him, whence knowest thou me? Jesus answered and said unto him, before that Philip called thee, when thou wast under the fig tree, I saw thee. I saw thee. You see, Nathanael recognized that Jesus had correctly assessed his character. Jesus had looked at it at his heart as well. Said, "Hey, I see your heart, and there's no deceit, there's no guile in your heart." And Philip said, "Well, how can you know that? We've just met." And Jesus said, "No, well, when you were sitting under that fig tree, and Philip came to you and told you that they'd found the one that Moses and the prophets had written about, and he told you it was me. I saw you there. I saw you sitting under that fig tree." And again, it was probably at noontime. It was hot, and Nathanael was sitting there to rest. The leaves provided shade, probably provided, you know, some privacy. And yet Jesus saw him sitting under that fig tree. Now, look at what Nathanael says in response to that. Nathanael answered and saith unto him, "Rabbi, thou art the Son of God. Thou art the King of Israel." Again, a great confession of faith from one that a few seconds earlier had said, "Can anything good come out of Nazareth? Could the Messiah really come from Nazareth?" And yet here's Nathanael confessing simply after Jesus said, "Well, I saw you sitting under the fig tree, and I know your heart. There's no guile in your heart, no deceit in your heart." And Nathanael said, "You're the Son of God. You are the Son of God. You are the King of Israel." Now, when he said this, notice what Jesus says in verse 50, and I'll read 50 and 51. "Jesus answered and said unto him, Because I said unto thee, I saw thee under the fig tree, believest thou?" I mean, you believe I'm the Son of God just because I told you I saw you sitting under the fig tree? You believe I'm the King of Israel just because I saw you sitting under the fig tree? Notice what Jesus said, "Thou shalt see greater things than these." What Jesus was saying to Nathanael is, you haven't seen anything yet. I mean, you're just getting started. And if you have that much faith to believe that I'm the Son of God and the King of Israel simply because I told you I saw you sitting under a fig tree and I saw your heart, just wait. Just wait to what you're going to see. Notice what he says in verse 51. "And he saith unto him, Verily, verily, I say unto you, hereafter ye shall see heaven open and the angels of God ascending and descending upon the Son of Man." Now, let me just take a couple minutes. Now, I'm going to tell you what I think happened. Okay? This is my opinion. I'll label it as my opinion before I tell you. Nathanael was a cynical man. I think he got cynical because I think he was an idealist. I think he was a dreamer. I think he had read the Old Testament. I think he had read about folks that had an experience with God, where God was so near to them that they could feel his presence in a very special way. And Nathanael wanted that experience himself. He wanted that experience with God. And he lived in a day. I mean, the people hadn't heard from God in over 400 years. I mean, when John the Baptist appeared on the scene, he was the first prophet of God since Malachi. And it had been 400 years. And I think Nathanael got to the point in his life and say, "We'll never experience God in that way again. It'll never happen again." And his despair for not having that kind of experience with God made him a cynic. Then he'd heard about John the Baptist. Then he'd come and hear John the Baptist preach. And as others did, he detected in the preaching of John the Baptist the voice of divine authority. And John the Baptist said, "I come to prepare the way. The Messiah is on his way. I've just come to get things ready for him." And I think that sent a thrill through Nathanael. I think he was on his way home from hearing John the Baptist. I think he stopped underneath that fig tree to rest. Said, "What a wonderful day. It seems like heaven has opened again and God has spoken." Almost like the experience that Jacob had when he was fleeing from home on his way to see his uncle Laban. And he spent the night and made the rock his pillow. And he had a dream that a ladder reached to heaven. And the angels of God were going up and down that ladder. At that very moment, Philip found him. Said, "We found the Messiah. We found the one that Moses and the prophets wrote about." And again, Nathanael said, his cynicism coming back, "There's nothing good that can come out of Nazareth." Philip said, "Come and see. Come and see for yourself." Nathanael said, "Okay." And he come. And Jesus said, "You're an Israelite with no guile. I saw you sitting underneath that fig tree." And Jesus and Nathanael said, You are the Son of God. You are the King of Israel." And Jesus said, "Hey, you're going to see greater things than this. You're going to see something just like Jacob saw. You're going to see the angels of God descending and ascending from heaven. You're going to see it, Nathanael. You're going to see it." And Nathanael became one of his disciples, that group of men that turned the world upside down for Jesus Christ. Thank you for being here tonight. The men will be praying back in the library. The ladies will be praying over here in this room. Join them if you can. We'll stand and have a word of prayer and be dismissed. But thank you so much for being here tonight.